Hello, I'm Chris Basden, an editor with AICPA's Journal of Accountancy. You're listening to the JFA podcast, where we talk about the key issues facing the accounting profession. Today on the podcast, we're going to be talking about how the new federal tax law impacts state taxes. But before we get started, please take a few seconds to listen to a short message from our sponsor.
Did you know 75% of people now prefer to pay by credit or debit? With CPA Charge, you can let your clients pay their bill online and you'll get the reporting details you need for easy reconciliation. AICPA members can sign up at cpacharge.com/podcast and get your program fee waived for 6 months.
Welcome back. As we all know, CPAs around the country are still trying to figure out how the recent tax reform will impact their clients at the federal level, but they're also interested in how it will impact their clients at the state level as well. To help, today I'm going to be talking to two guests. The first is Alistair Nevius, the Editor-in-Chief of the Tax Advisor. How are you today, Alistair?
I'm doing well, Chris. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining us. Our second guest is Eileen Scher, a CPA and CGMA, who is a Senior Manager for AICPA Tax Policy and Advocacy. Eileen is also Senior Manager of the AICPA State and Local Tax Technical Resource Panel. How are you, Eileen?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Great. Thanks so much for joining us. So, Eileen, one of the most controversial aspects of the newly enacted federal tax law was its $10,000 cap of the state and local tax deduction. What kinds of state taxes are included in that federal deduction?
Starting in 2018, individuals can deduct up to $10,000 of state taxes, which includes both real estate taxes and either income taxes or sales taxes. They added the sales taxes several years ago for those states that don't have any income taxes.
Has the IRS provided any guidance on the specifics of the $10,000 cap, and has the AICPA asked the IRS for any such guidance?
The IRS has not yet provided any guidance on the specifics of the $10,000 cap. The AICPA did send a comment letter to IRS and Treasury on January 29th requesting guidance on many issues related to the new law, including on Internal Revenue Code Section 164, requesting confirmation that taxpayers can deduct in 2018, subject to the $10,000 cap, any state and local taxes paid in 2017 and that are non-deductible in 2017. Also, the AICPA recently shared with the IRS some questions from members, including several on the SALT deduction. For example, AICPA pointed out that guidance is needed on whether there will be any requirement for ordering or a priority of which kinds of taxes should be considered first, or if there will be no priority order required, and how the tax benefit rule will be applied to tax refunds.
Thanks, Eileen. Now, Alistair, I know you've got a lot of questions for Eileen as well. Would you like to jump in now?
Sure, thanks. I guess, first of all, speaking of IRS guidance, there was a lot of talk at the end of December when the legislation was being enacted about whether taxpayers might want to prepay any of their state taxes before the end of 2017 because the deduction was going to be limited in 2018. Did the IRS provide any guidance on that?
Yes, it was an exciting time at the end of December. When the final version of the legislation was revealed, Section 1142 of the law contained a caveat regarding the SALT deduction provision, which said that any 2017 prepayment of 2018 state income taxes would not be deductible in 2017. Interestingly, it only addressed state income taxes. It did not mention state real property taxes. That opened the door for many taxpayers and practitioners to consider prepaying 2018 state real property taxes before the end of 2017 to be able to deduct them without any limit in 2017. The IRS quickly issued information release IR 2017-210 on December 27th, just during the end of the holiday season, while taxpayers were waiting in long lines in some states to prepay the 2018 real estate taxes. IRS said in that advisory statement that to be deductible in 2017, the 2018 real property taxes must be paid and assessed in 2017, prior to 2018. Some jurisdictions did assess 2018 real property taxes in 2017, including the District of Columbia. So those prepayments in 2017 should be deductible.
Okay, and let's move on to the state's responses to the federal, state, and local tax, or SALT, tax deduction $10,000 cap. Why are various states so concerned about the impact of the cap, and how significant is that impact?
Many of the blue states are particularly and significantly impacted by the new federal law cap on the state tax deductibility. That is because the new $10,000 cap on the federal deduction for state taxes will no longer cover a large part of what in the past, according to like data from 2015 that I know of, was the average SALT deduction for many of these residents. For example, New York residents took an average SALT deduction of $22,000, and New Jersey and California residents took an average SALT deduction of $18,000. So the $10,000 cap won't cover all of that. More than a third of California residents used the state tax deduction in 2015, claiming an average of $18,438, the third highest after New York and Connecticut, according to IRS data. And in New Jersey, 41% of those who filed 2015 tax returns used the SALT deduction to reduce their total bill, according to the Tax Policy Center, which is totaling a combined $32.2 billion. That's a lot of money for these states and for the people in the states to be paying. In Connecticut, 41% of Connecticut residents claimed the SALT deduction with the average claim of $18,940, which puts Connecticut behind only New York. And lastly, in the District of Columbia, 3% of taxpayers, 11,310 residents, will see their federal taxes increase because of the new $10,000 cap on the SALT deduction and not offset by other changes in the law. Officials in these states are trying to revise their tax codes to ease their residents' loss of federal deductions and try to make their residents come out even. New York is looking into a solution because if they made no changes, they estimate their residents would pay an additional $14 billion in a year in taxes.
That is a lot of money. Can you provide an overview of the approaches that the states are considering in these cases?
Sure. There's basically four different approaches these states are considering. The first is a state tax credit for charitable contributions to a state-created public purpose fund, with the donation qualifying as federally tax deductible. The second approach is an employer-paid payroll tax that would be federally tax deductible from business income instead of or to reduce the employee personal income tax. The third approach is an entity-level state tax for pass-through businesses, with the owners receiving a state tax credit for the taxes paid at the entity level. And last, there's always the possible approach that some states are considering of some legal challenges against the federal government.
Okay. How would that first approach work, the charitable fund approach?
Well, it should be pointed out that this is not really new. There are similar existing plans in several states that give taxpayers a credit for contributing to public funds that give money to local causes. In fact, there are already 100 similar programs in 30 different states, including several red states, that use charitable deductions to offset taxes. Some of the credits support tuition for schools in Alabama, Arizona, and South Carolina, college scholarships in California, and conservation in Colorado. Additionally, some fund contributions are used to offset tuition paid to private schools. With states pursuing this approach, there are risks that IRS may say there's no federal charitable deduction for such donations. But IRS has allowed these funds since 1987, and in 2011 issued a private letter ruling, 2011-06-010, with a release date of February 4th, 2011, if anybody wants to look it up, that permitted donations to a state tax credit program to be considered charitable contributions. So there's a history here. The IRS allows charitable contributions to state agencies when the contribution is solely for public purposes. Therefore, the new proposed legislation in many of these states require all amounts in the new state fund to be used for those public purposes upon appropriation by the General Assemblies, and the state treasurers would probably manage the donation process. It has been pointed out that if the U.S. Treasury and the IRS want to say that this approach is not valid, then the current states that provide a credit for charitable contributions for their residents will probably lose that benefit as well.
What are some of the states that are considering this approach?
In California, on January 30th, the California Senate passed a bill that would allow taxpayers to make a federally deductible charitable contribution to a state charitable public purpose fund. It's actually called the California Excellence Fund, and then receive a state tax credit that the taxpayer could use to reduce their California state taxes by 85% of their contribution. It wouldn't be 100%. Taxpayers would claim the credit for their donation to reduce their state tax liability. In New York, there's a proposal that provides a new charitable gifts trust fund with a personal income tax credit equal to 85% of eligible contributions, along with the option for local governments to offer property tax credits for local charitable fund contributions. Similarly, New Jersey is considering a similar plan that would allow homeowners to make up lost property tax deductions by making a federally deductible charitable contribution to funds set up by towns and cities to pay for public services, including schools and law enforcement. The municipality would provide homeowners a tax credit for the donation that they may deduct on their federal tax return. Lastly, Rhode Island has a bill to create a new Rhode Island Ocean State Fund within the state's general fund. The bill would allow taxpayers to make contributions to the Ocean State Fund and then receive a tax credit.
You mentioned that there may be a risk that the IRS would not allow the federal charitable deduction. Have you heard if any of these states have been discussing the charitable deduction approach with Treasury or with IRS officials and what the response has been?
In January, Treasury Secretary Mnuchin said that that and other workarounds are ridiculous, and he hopes that the states are more focused on cutting their budgets and giving tax cuts to their people in their states than they are in trying to evade the law. When the acting IRS Commissioner David Cotter was testifying in Congress on February 14th, he said that charitable contributions qualify for tax deductions only if they are given for truly charitable purposes. He said in his congressional testimony that under the general principles for charitable contribution, the primary purpose of the contribution is donative, which is detached and disinterested generosity. After the hearing, Cotter said, "What we're doing at this point is monitoring what the states are doing, and at the appropriate point, we'll issue some guidance. But at this point, it's too early in the process to try and issue anything. So we don't have any clarity at this point."
Okay, thanks. You also mentioned a payroll tax option. Can you explain how that would work? And if a particular state is considering that approach, and also are there any concerns with that approach?
Sure. The second approach shifts the state income tax to a payroll tax. New York is considering eliminating the personal income tax, which is kind of drastic, and instead employers would pay on behalf of their employees a statewide payroll tax that the employer business would be allowed to deduct. The statewide employer payroll tax would change who pays the tax, from employees to employers, who still can deduct taxes with no limit. Specifically, the New York proposal provides a new optional employer compensation expense tax at a flat rate for payroll expense exceeding $40,000, with a formula for computing a corresponding personal income tax credit. Employers would face a higher tax bill, so they may reduce wages, but the state would provide employees a wage credit that would be deductible. However, it may be difficult for some employers to lower an employee's wages due to existing contracts. Also, lowering wages would reduce employees' future Social Security benefits. This approach would impact all taxpayers, not just those that itemize. So everybody's getting the benefit there. Nonprofit employers would also be subject to the payroll taxes, but they would receive no benefit from the deduction.
That's very interesting. Can you also provide us some background on the entity level state tax approach, and are any states considering that?
Sure. Some states, including Connecticut, are considering an entity level state tax for pass-through businesses. Because the new federal law continues to allow corporations and pass-through owners and investors to continue deducting state and local taxes paid or accrued in carrying on a trade or business, a tax at the entity level would be federally tax deductible by the businesses, and then the owners would receive a state tax credit for the tax paid by the entity. For example, in Connecticut, the governor has proposed legislation that has now been introduced as SB 11 It would tax pass-through businesses at the entity level, allowing partnerships and S-corps to pay and deduct their state income taxes, and would create an offsetting state personal income tax credit for the entity's members. Specifically, Connecticut's proposal would impose a 6.99% income tax on the net receipts of partnerships, S-corps, and limited liability companies that are partnerships for federal tax purposes. Pass-throughs could claim the amount as an expense for the federal deduction purposes, so they are made whole for the tax. That expense would likely lower the pass-through's distribution to members who work in the entity. So individual members who are now limited by the federal SALT deduction cap could at least have that made up for them by the state income tax credit. I will note that a major concern with this proposal is that the treatment of multi-state owners of pass-through entities by their states of residence, that's an issue. While multi-state owners may be entitled to a federal tax deduction because the tax is on the trader business, the question remains whether other states where the pass-through entity owners are residents will respect that tax as a creditable tax. Also, I just want to mention, in New York, the Department of Taxation and Finance recently issued a preliminary report on the Federal Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that included as one of its options a new statewide unincorporated business tax offset by personal income tax credits for business owners. We'll have to see if they end up pursuing that approach.
Yes, yes, we will. And finally, can you tell us more about the legal challenge approach?
Sure. Some states are considering a legal challenge to the U.S. government on constitutional grounds. New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut have announced plans to sue the federal government, potentially arguing that the tax law violates states' rights and is unfair because it singles out Democratic states for political reasons. The suit has not yet been filed.
And besides these federal SALT deduction workaround issues, will states be dealing with conformity to the new tax reform changes?
Sure. States are already starting to address conformity to the new federal rules and will be doing so over the coming weeks and months. And they normally do this at the end, whenever there's a federal change and they need to deal with conformity. Most states will need to address the new rules in one way or the other. Most states conform to some, but not all, of the federal and Internal Revenue Code. The extent of their conformity varies a lot. To give a brief background regarding conformity, the 50 states and District of Columbia have various methods of conforming to the federal rules. There are 18 states in the District of Columbia that have rolling conformity with the Internal Revenue Code, meaning that they conform to the relevant provisions of the new federal law automatically. So on December 22nd, 2017, when the new federal law was enacted, those states automatically had their tax law changed too. There are 19 states that have static conformity, which means those states must enact in their state legislatures an update to their fixed state conformity statutes to adopt the new provisions as of a specific date. By the way, 9 states do not have an individual income tax, 3 states do not have a corporate income tax, and 4 states have a gross receipts tax instead. Also, 4 states do not conform to the Internal Revenue Code for individual income tax, and 3 states do not conform for the corporate income tax. So those states are likely only to conform selectively to specific provisions, incorporating certain federal provisions or definitions by reference, but omitting large parts of the Internal Revenue Code and forgoing the use of federal definitions of income as their own starting points for calculation of state income tax. No state conforms to every provision of the Internal Revenue Code. That would be too easy and give up states' rights. Each state has its own set of modifications, additions, and subtractions to the Internal Revenue Code. Each state adopts its own set of rules and definitions, frequently in addition to those in the Internal Revenue Code. So it gets way more complicated when you deal with state tax issues.
I see. And do all the states start at the same point for personal income tax?
If it wasn't complicated enough, the states also differ as far as their starting points for personal income tax. 31 states start with federal adjusted gross income, federal AGI. 6 states start with federal taxable income, which means that the pass-through deduction, which is after you consider itemized deductions, will apply in those states unless the state decouples from that specific provision or they change their income starting point from federal taxable income to federal adjusted gross income. Five states start with state gross income, and nine states do not have an income tax. Because the federal law was enacted at the end of the year, the states are just now beginning to analyze the impact of the new law on their individual state. A few states have recently issued reports analyzing the impact, such as DC issued earlier this week, and many more will issue such a report over the coming weeks and months. Once they figure out the impact, they will have to decide how much they want to conform to the new changes and where they want to decouple from them.
Okay. And can you also describe some of the state impacts from the new rules?
Some of the impacts on the states may involve large revenue increases for states that conform to the, for example, the now repealed $4,050 per person federal personal exemption, either directly or by linking their own personal exemptions to the number of exemptions claimed at the federal level. For example, on February 6th, the Maryland Senate passed a bill that would prevent state taxpayers from paying next year an additional $1.2 billion, $730 million to the state and $490 million to local governments, just by decoupling from the new federal law on personal exemptions and ensuring that Marylanders can continue to take the personal exemption on their Maryland tax returns. In addition, for businesses, because many states already do not conform or have already decoupled from the federal bonus depreciation provision, those states likely will not conform to the new federal provision providing for immediate expensing of investments in machinery and equipment. Other areas where states are not likely to conform or may decouple is with the increased federal standard deduction and the new pass-through deduction. For example, the Oregon Senate just passed a bill to decouple from the new federal pass-through deduction. States, however, may conform to the business changes, for example, net operating losses and the interest expense deduction limitation, as those changes will bring in more state revenue from businesses. It should be noted that other changes in the federal law, such as the Section 529 plan expanding to allow K-12 private school, may actually increase costs to the states. Likewise, the change in the Affordable Care Act individual mandate penalty to zero in 2019 may increase state health care spending, and the states are going to need to look at that.
So, Eileen, we've got time for one more question, and I think I'd like to end with this one. Can you suggest any resources for further analysis of state tax impact of the new federal rules?
Sure. The AICPA has a great Tax Reform Resource Center and also the Tax Season Resources for CPAs that has a web page with various state tax-related tax resources that the members may be interested in. Also, the National Conference of State Legislatures, the Tax Policy Center, and the Tax Foundation, they have state tax policy impact of tax reform web pages that may be helpful.
Thanks, Eileen. And thanks to you too, Alistair. And I'd also like to thank our audience for listening today. If you enjoyed this podcast, check out more JFA podcasts on our website and on Podomatic.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.